Okay, so I'm calling to order the meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. We do not yet have a quorum. I think we've all been struggling with the roads, et cetera. My apologies even to start, even as late as we are. And as folks come in, we'll have a quorum and we can move the bill before us and approve minutes and that kind of thing. So just a few introductory remarks about the bill. And again, we'll take the official steps once we do have a quorum. So the plan today is to hear about the amended version of House File 1, the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Act. This morning, for this first hour and a half, we're going to have the bill be presented to us and ask some questions of testifiers as appropriate, et cetera. And then we're going to come back this evening at 5:30 to resume the presentation of the bill and then to receive public testimony. With the plan being that then on Thursday is when we will discuss and vote on the bill. And a reminder to members that and members of the public as well that amendments to the bill will be due at 3 p.m. on Wednesday if there are any. We're going to have Representative Katiza Witun. We'll start with a presentation, and we'll have Ms. Mock from House Research walk us through the provisions of the bill. There are a number of pieces to it, and so my plan is to have the presentation of the bill by Representative Katiza Witun and her testifiers kind of talk about the different topic areas, and then we'll invite questions along the way as we go. Are there any questions from members who are here? I know we're missing a few about the plan for these next couple of days at all. And I'm not seeing it. I'll certainly ask again as we get more folks around. So Representative Katiza Witun, why don't we have you head on up and begin the presentation. And again, once we have a quorum, we'll put the bill formally before us, et cetera. I know that you'll have, and I'll point members to the DE5 amendment in your folders and members of the public as well, which is the version that we'll be discussing. And so with that, Representative Katiza Witun, if you want to start your presentation on the bill, and then we'll proceed from there.
Okay, very good. Mr. Chair, members, advocates, parents, and caregivers, good morning. I'm excited to be back to discuss the new and improved Great Start for All Minnesota Children Act. As you know, House File 1 is a bold set of investments to support our youngest Minnesotans and their families by addressing both the persistent opportunity gap and the nationwide child care crisis. Last year, we heard regularly how the first few years of a child's life truly does impact the rest of their life. In House File 1, we highlight some critical initiatives to stem the opportunity gap here in Minnesota by increasing home visiting opportunities, investing in both scholarships and child care assistance to help families cover the cost of child care, and supporting child care providers by increasing rates, providing grants for potential improvements in delivery, and offering the opportunity for ongoing process improvement. We know there are thousands more children and families that we can help. So this year, we are doing everything we can to meet Minnesota families where they are right now. Children are only young once, and now is the time to invest in them. This is a down payment on the future of our state. Our kids can't wait, and their future begins today. As a parent to three young children, I empathize with the families struggling to find quality, affordable childcare across the state. I know firsthand what it is like to spend almost twice a mortgage payment on childcare costs and to try and figure out whether to take unpaid time away from work or to spend much, if not all, a paycheck on childcare. These are the tough choices that Minnesota parents are facing on a daily basis. I'm grateful for the testifiers who will share their stories today about the positive impact of scholarships and CCAP that have had on their lives. Just last week, we heard from DHS on the numerous improvements made to their process to strengthen program integrity. This was a huge focus of the work that we did here together last year. With those adjustments made, we can feel confident that increased funding to the Child Care Assistance Program and to provider reimbursement rates will help even more families in need. With not one, but two 2019 field hearings on the intersection between child care and jobs, we had the fortune to learn about some of the struggles that are facing families, providers, and community partners in Greater Minnesota. We've learned that these struggles are not unique to the state of Minnesota, and in fact, we see comparable rates and declining availability in Wisconsin with a different regulatory climate. I value the insight of providers sharing the challenges that they have in high-quality delivery with low reimbursement rates. An update to this proposal, based on the feedback from our Greater Minnesota advocates, is moving to one consistent statewide reimbursement rate. Additionally, this proposal includes numerous grant programs to better support child care providers as they get their business off the ground or take desired steps to grow their business and continue developing essential skills in this ever-evolving industry. It's clearer now than ever, the economics of childcare don't work. When we listen to parents and providers, we hear that there is not a one-size-fits-all delivery model that works for every family, and there are improvements that we can make in regulatory reform to better support all types of providers. We will hear more from Representative Wasilewicz about suggestions from the Child Care Regulatory Reform Group. In order to aid providers to make potential delivery improvements, we must continue to adjust our own processes, including an evaluation of parent-aware. It's important to know how well our investments are working. Ongoing feedback from parents and caregivers is essential. Taking the time to evaluate our systems and provide the funding necessary to do so is critical. To better discern where we may encourage providers to improve delivery and to see how we all can better prepare our children for a lifetime of learning, investing in a consistent kindergarten readiness assessment is crucial. I appreciate and acknowledge the expertise of our medical and community development professionals who've shared the data showing us that these investments have a measurable impact on outcomes. The research that we've seen shows that the first few years, 0 to age 3, has driven our focus to shift investment directly to our youngest Minnesotans and littlest learners. The consortium of advocates that we will hear from across the early childhood spectrum will remind us that no single piece of legislation can get us exactly where we want to go, but when we work together and provide support for families when and where they need it the most, we can accomplish wonderful things. There is a saying about investing. Someone is sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree long time ago. When we take the steps necessary to fulfill our commitment to each Minnesota child that they may reach their true potential, we are planting that tree. Every child deserves a great start to life here in Minnesota, and we all benefit when that happens. I know that while we have a long time to go, this package is also a great start. With that, Mr. Chair, I will ask that Annie walk us through the details on just how we're going to do it.
Thank you, Representative Katiza-Watoon. So we're going to do a couple bits of business since we now do have a quorum before we have Ms. Mock walk us through the bill. So one thing I want to do is, members, you'll have in your packet the minutes from Thursday, February 13th, and if I can have a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. So Representative Morrison moves approval of the minutes from February 13th. Any discussion? And hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we approved last Thursday's minutes. And then Representative Katiza-Watoon, I think we'll have you move that House File 1 be approved and re-refer to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. Is that your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that HF1 be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Okay, thank you. And then Representative Katiza-Watoon has the DE5 amendment to put the bill in the shape that she wishes. Are you moving that amendment, Representative Katiza-Watoon?
I move the DE5 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And hold on one moment. Okay, and so any discussion? So hearing none, all in favor of approval of the author's amendment of the DE5, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Okay, so the DE5 has been added to House File 1, and that's the bill that's before us. Representative Katiza-Watoon, so we heard your opening remarks, and so it sounds like the plan next is to have Ms. Mock with House Research walk us through the pieces of the bill. Just for the benefit of members, the thought, who were not here earlier, the thought is to just make sure we've got a solid understanding of what's in the bill from Ms. Mock, and then we're going to have a series of presentations from testifiers and different components of the bill. And when we get to that, we can talk a bit about questions for them versus saving questions, et cetera. But Ms. Mock, if you can just walk us through the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as noted, I'll be walking through the DE5, particularly looking at the bill summary for the DE5, which you should have in front of you. The DE5 has three articles. The first article is related to home visiting. Section 1 establishes a new home visiting program and directs the Commissioner of Health to award grants to community health boards, nonprofit organizations, and tribal nations to start up or expand home visiting programs serving pregnant women and families with young children. These programs must support voluntary home visits by early childhood or health professionals, and the grant funds must be used for evidence-based home visiting programs that address health equity or evidence-informed home visiting programs that address health equity. The commissioner is is required to give priority in awarding the grants to programs seeking to expand home visiting services with community or regional partnerships. At least 75% of the grant funds are to be allocated to the evidence-based programs, and up to 25% are to be allocated to the evidence-informed programs. The commissioner is to use up to 10% of the annual appropriation for training and technical assistance and to administer and evaluate the program. And the commissioner is allowed to contract for training, capacity building, technical assistance, and evaluation support. Section 2 of Article 1 appropriates $30 million in fiscal year 2021 from the general fund for this home visiting program. Article 2 has provisions related to early learning and care. Section 1 has to do with the Quality Rating and Improvement System, CRIS, or Parent Aware. Under current law, the framework of the Quality Rating and Improvement System is laid out, and it is informed by the evaluation results of a quality rating system that was in effect in fiscal year 2008. This section would modify current law to direct the Commissioner of Human Services to arrange an independent evaluation of CRIS and then use the evaluation findings to revise the system. Specifically, the commissioner is to arrange by February 1, 2021, an independent evaluation of the system's effectiveness and impact on children's progress towards school readiness, the quality of the early care and education workforce, and parents' ability to access meaningful information about program quality. The evaluation is to be performed by a consultant or a staff member from an agency other than DHS. Each evaluation has to meet specified minimum criteria regarding the analyses that have to be conducted for the evaluation. The evaluation findings and the commissioner's recommendations for potential future evaluations have to be reported to the chairs and ranking members of the legislative committees with jurisdiction over earlier learning and child care. Section 2 of Article 2 sets the combined count of participants for voluntary pre-K and school readiness plus at 7,160 annually on an ongoing basis. Under current law, the number of participants is set to drop to 3,160 starting in fiscal year 2022. Section 3 modifies the kindergarten readiness assessment. Under current law, the Commissioner of Education is permitted but not required to implement a kindergarten readiness assessment. This Section 3 would require the Commissioner of Education to implement the Kindergarten Readiness Assessment and would also direct the Commissioner to provide school districts and charter schools with a process for measuring kindergarten readiness and also direct the Commissioner to provide measurement tools that the district and charter school can use for this assessment. Every district and charter school would be required to use this Commissioner-provided process beginning in the 2021 to 2022 school year. And every district and charter school would have to report kindergarten readiness results to the Department of Education. And then the commissioner would then have to publicly report the kindergarten readiness results and additionally integrate those data into the statewide longitudinal educational data systems. Section 4 of Article 2 relates to the early learning scholarships, and specifically it changes the eligibility for the scholarships. So under current law, a scholarship recipient must be 3 or 4 years old, with some exceptions. This section would lower the scholarship age for eligibility for the scholarship to require that a recipient is from birth to through age 3, except for the following. A sibling of a scholarship recipient who can be through age 4, a child not yet age 5 who's participating in a Pathway 2 program, and a recipient who had previously received a scholarship until that child is eligible for kindergarten. Section 5 also relates to the early learning scholarships, and this has to do with program eligibility. Under current law, beginning July 1, 2020, any program that wants scholarships or wants to accept scholarships has to have a 3 or 4 star parent aware rating. That deadline would be extended to July 1, 2022. Section 6 of Article 2 removes the sunset on a formula that's used for calculating school readiness plus programs, and this is a conforming change made related to the change in the ongoing count of participants in voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus. Section 7 is an appropriation for the early learning scholarships. This section would add $190 million to the existing fiscal year 2021 appropriation. Section 8 is an appropriation for the kindergarten readiness assessment and would add $2.4 million to the existing fiscal year 2021 appropriation. Section 9 is an appropriation for the quality rating and improvement system, adding $1.65 million to the fiscal year 2021 appropriation. Section 10 would direct the Commissioner of Human Services to contract with an organization or a consultant to develop a proposal for a risk-based model for monitoring compliance with family child care licensing standards. The contractor would have to engage with stakeholders to gather input about appropriate licensing standards and appropriate tiers for violations of the standards, and also analyze licensing data to identify key indicators that predict compliance with other licensing standards for use in an abbreviated inspection process. The commissioner would have to submit a report and propose legislation for implementing the new licensing model to the legislature no later than February 1, 2023. Section 11 of Article 2 provides an appropriation of $850,000 in fiscal year 2021 for this family child care regulation modernization project. Article 3 relates to child care availability. The first section amends the CCAP rates. So under current law, the maximum CCAP rates are set at the 25th percentile of the market rate for the 2011 child care provider rate survey. And those rates vary by price clusters across the state. Section 1 would modify the rate so that it would be equal to the 25th percentile of the market rate in the county or county price cluster with the highest cost 25th percentile in the most recent child care provider rate survey. So the change there is moving from the 2011 provider rate survey to the most recent, and also moving from rates that vary across the state to one statewide rate. The section would also modify the maximum registration fee that can be paid for the program. Section 2 of Article 3 establishes a new grant program, the Retaining Early Educators Through Attaining Incentives Now, Retain Grant Program. The grant program would provide competitive grants to incentivize well-trained child care professionals to stay in the workforce. The Commissioner of Human Services would allocate the grant funds to a nonprofit organization to administer the Retain Grant Program, and up to 10% of the grant funds could be used to administer the program. The grants would be made annually, and allow the grant funds could be used for program supplies, training, or personal expenses. And beginning January 1, 2022, the commissioner would have to report annually to the legislature on the number of grants awarded and the program outcomes. Section 3 of Article 3 modifies an existing grant program, the Teacher Education and Compensation Helps Program, which was established to provide tuition scholarships and education incentives to early care and education providers. This section would increase the tuition scholarships available from $5,000 per year to $10,000 per year, and also increase the minimum education incentives from $100 to $250 for participants in the tuition scholarships program if they complete a year of working in the early care and education field. It would also add to the type of employment applicants may have to include being employed by a public pre-kindergarten program. And it would modify the amount the scholarship recipients have to contribute from 10% to at least 10% of the total scholarship, and decrease the amount their employer has to contribute from 10% to at least 5% of the total scholarship. Section 4 of Article 3 would also relates to the TEACH grant program. So this would increase the amount a nonprofit organization that receives a TEACH grant can use to administer the program from 5% to 10% of the grant amount. Section 5 establishes a new grant program, a family, friend, and neighbor grant program. The Commissioner of Health would be directed to make grants available, two types of grants available, one to fund community health boards, local or regional libraries, community-based organizations, nonprofit organizations, and Indian tribes working with family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. And the second types of grants for community-based partnerships to implement early literacy programs. With respect to the grants for the grants to work with the family, friend, and neighbor caregivers, the section identifies the activities for which these organizations can use the grant funds, and most of those activities relate to training and resource building. The grants for the early literacy programs must be used to fund existing or new partnerships between community health boards, local or regional library systems, community-based organizations, nonprofit organizations, or Indian tribes to implement early literacy programs in low-income communities. The commissioner is directed to evaluate the impacts of the grants on children's school readiness, including but not limited to social-emotional learning indicators, and submit a written report by February 1st, 2022 to the legislature. Section 6 of Article 3 directs the Commissioner of Human Services to provide grants to First Children's Finance for loans related to improving or planning, designing, and constructing childcare or early childhood education sites. First Children's Finance would be required to report to the Commissioner the purposes for which the funds were used and also submit an independent audit for each fiscal year in which the grants are received. Section 7 appropriates $3.5 million in fiscal year 2021 for a grant to First Children's Finance. Section 8 appropriates $1 million in fiscal year 2021 for the Family, Friend, and Neighbor Grant Program. Section 9 has appropriations for the CCAP programs. There's appropriated $20 million in fiscal year 2021 to reduce the basic sliding fee program waiting list. And then $170 million is appropriated in fiscal year 2021 to increase child care rates. So this, to determine the increased rates, the commissioner would have to utilize the most recent child care market rate survey and then set the new rate percentile such that the additional expenditure equals the $170 million appropriated. This is a one-time appropriation, and the rate would return to its regular amount beginning in fiscal year 2022. Section 10 provides appropriations to the Department of Employment for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Appropriates $10 million for grants to local communities to increase the supply of child care providers to support economic development. Appropriates $4 million for a grant to the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, and also appropriates $150,000 for a grant to Women Venture to operate a business training program for child care providers and to create materials that can be used free of charge for startup, expansion, and operation of child care businesses. Section 11 of Article 3 is an appropriation for the Retain Grant Program, so it appropriate $2.5 million in fiscal year 2021 for the program. Section 12 is an appropriation for the Teach Grant Program. $500,000 is appropriated in fiscal year 2021. And Section 13 is a reviser instruction directing the reviser to renumber the Teach Grant Program as a section in DHS statute, as it is a program administered by the DHS.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. And members of the public, I want to direct your attention to a spreadsheet that contains the finances for the bill. And to thank our just phenomenal nonpartisan staff for their work in putting all of this together. So, members, any clarification questions for Ms. Mock? Of course, we'll have plenty of time to talk through this. Just want to make sure. Okay, seeing none. So, if we can call up Ms. Robinson, and as she comes up, again, the plan, members, is to hear from testifiers regarding different portions of the proposal. I expect that we'll hear sort of cover each of the areas. We'll have plenty of time on Thursday to talk about the bill as a whole, but as testifiers are up, if members have questions about the specific points that they've made or clarifications, please feel free to ask. If there's points members want to make or questions they want to ask regarding sort of the bigger picture on the bill, various things to represent Katiza Witun, I might ask we save that for Thursday to make sure we can get through all of our testifiers today. So with that, Ms. Robinson, if you can introduce yourself, identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nidra Robinson. I'm the Early Childhood Program Manager at Simpson Housing Services. I'm also representing the Minnesota Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting and the Prenatal to 3 Coalition. Simpson Housing Services is a nonprofit providing support to people experiencing homelessness. Our programs include an emergency shelter, single adult supportive housing, and family supportive housing. And we strive to find housing for all of our individuals and families that we serve. At any given time, we provide supportive housing to 100 individuals, 250 families with over 500 children. Unfortunately, there are more children experiencing homelessness than adults in Minnesota. At Simpson Housing Services, our early childhood team of early childhood specialists go into the home and provide services centered around health and well-being, child development, parent education, and parenting support. Our parents that we serve are under extreme stress and often have to focus on just getting through the day with their families. Our goal is to support parents through these intense times and provide them with an opportunity to focus on meeting the developmental needs of their children while we help them to stabilize their family for long-term success. The home visiting language in Article 1 will help put session law into stature, and it will provide important flexibility and innovation, allowing programs to voluntarily serve families who do not meet the criteria to enter an evidence-based program. It's critical that we help stabilize families in need, especially when they ask us for assistance, because it positions them for long-term success. Thank you for your support of voluntary home visiting services across Minnesota.
Ms. Robinson, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Robinson, who, as you could tell, is here to focus on Representative Pryor, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Robinson, thank you for your testimony. Could you help us understand a little bit more about homelessness, especially if we're talking about, you know, infants, young children? I know you can't say this is the majority. I'm not asking you to say, like, this is the majority, but could you give us some descriptions of what homelessness looks like for children?
Ms. Robinson.
Yes, I absolutely can. Right now, I have in our early childhood program about 178 children that are 0 to 5. Most of the parents that we are serving right now are young parents, anywhere from 18 to, I'd say, around 32-ish. So we're experiencing homelessness with very young children and, in my mind, very young parents. And our families are in transitional housing. We try to provide long-term and permanent supportive housing for them also. But they're in a situation where they don't necessarily know how long they're going to be in that housing that we're able to provide them with. So we have about 500 children. We actually serve children with their families 0 to 18. So the bulk of the other are children entering kindergarten and in public schools right now. But it's very, very challenging. It's hard to be poor. It's very challenging for our young parents to be able to not only find childcare that's affordable for them and in some places where childcare that fits their needs. A lot of them are working in jobs that fast food jobs or jobs where they're not paying that much and they don't have that much control over when they're working. So they may be working in the evening or overnight, and it's really hard to find childcare for them to do that. And it's really hard to find affordable housing right now. Housing is off the charts right now.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions, Ms. Robinson, who, again, was focused on Article 1, the home visiting piece? Ms. Robinson, thank you very much. And let's bring up Ms. Rao. Again, thank you, who I believe will be speaking to the voluntary pre-K portion. The bill makes those temporary, those children who are temporarily receiving preschool support and extending that to make sure we're not going backwards in that area. Ms. Rao, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Ms. Rao. Good morning, Chair Pinto and committee members. I'm a first grade teacher at Fridley at Stevenson Elementary. Formerly, I taught pre-K for 5 years. I'm here today in support of the provision to this bill to make pre-K funding or VPK funding permanent. Prior to age 5, a child's brain is more malleable, making early childhood education crucial for our children. They are like little sponges that soak up a great deal of information during the course of a school year. They enhance their cognitive, social, and emotional skills that will prepare them for the rest of their lives. The first 5 years of life is when most of the brain development occurs. Research on the short and long-term benefits of a high-quality preschool program found that there is up to a 30% reduction in achievement gap, higher math and reading performance, improved achievement in K-1 for second language learners, lower rates of teen pregnancy, more stable family lives, and a higher high school graduation rate. I want to share what the VPK funding has done for my district. Back in 2013, our pre-K program started with 2 sections, a morning and an afternoon class, with less than 20 students in each class. Fast forward to this year, the program now has 7 sections with 20 students in each section. Families who live in Fridley and surrounding cities show that they have a strong desire to send their child to a pre-K, which is apparent by the many families still on a wait list. Many families come from outside of Fridley to gain access to our pre-K program because their district does not provide a free pre-K program. Fridley is funded by both VPK dollars as well as School Readiness Plus dollars. The kindergarten teachers in the district have expressed that it's apparent which students come to pre-K and which have not. The students who have gone through our pre-K program enter kindergarten knowing how to do school. Our youngest scholars leave pre-K knowing how to walk in the hallways, sit for a 20-minute story, engage in meaningful conversations, advocate their wants and needs, and much, much more. I taught in Fridley at the pre-K level for 4 years. This past year, with a heavy heart, I left early childhood education. My biggest reason for leaving was the funding. Each year, I did not know whether or not I would have a job the following year. Without permanent funding, our job security was not there. It was stressful as a single income teacher to not know if I would be without a job each and every school year. I took a leap of faith and moved to first grade. While first grade is still classified as early childhood, it's much different than pre-K. However, I've had the rare opportunity to have some of the same students I had when I taught pre-K in the same district. As a first grade teacher, I'm able to see the impacts our pre-K program had on the students firsthand. In my classroom this year, I have a former student who tested out of special education because of the early interventions he received in pre-K, a student who spoke no English in pre-K, and 5 more students who are performing at or above grade level in every single subject. I also see firsthand the differences kindergarten teachers have seen. On the first day of school, I saw my former pre-K students able to do school, which was an amazing sight, all of which would not be possible without VPK funding. Looking back at my time in pre-K, I was always astonished at how much my students grew and matured in just one single year. I always sent them into summer break knowing that they would be ready to tackle the world when they started kindergarten. This would not be possible without the permanent funding of VPK dollars. I hope that you will consider making the funding permanent, the waitlist of families waiting to enroll, and how much our program has grown in 5 years proves that there's a strong desire for preschool not only in Fridley, but in the state of Minnesota. All children need and deserve the opportunity to attend pre-K. It should not be limited to families who can afford to send their child, but instead open to each and every family. Families in Minnesota should have a peace of mind knowing that their child will have access to a quality education in pre-K and not have to wait for a last-minute funding to maybe be passed each and every year. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. Thank you, Representative Katuza Watun, for including this provision in your bill, and I ask you all for your support in this provision.
Ms. Rao, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Rao? All right, thank you for your work with your young kids. So I'm going to jump, I think, and have Ms. Fitzpatrick come up and Ms. Gabriel, if I can. And as they come up, just a reminder to folks that we'll be taking public testimony this evening after we reconvene at 5:30. We'll probably have a little more presentation of the bill and then public testimony, so you can sign up with the page if you want to be added to the list to testify. And so I'm not sure which of you wants to go first, Ms. Fitzpatrick perhaps, Ms. Gabriel? Whoever does, please identify yourself for the record, and I think this is going to focus on the CCAP portion of the proposal.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here today representing Children's Defense Fund and also 2 broad coalitions, Prenatal to 3 and Kids Can't Wait Coalition. You have information on those coalitions in your packet. These are broad statewide coalitions of nonprofit, faith, childcare, foundation, and business advocates that strongly support House File 1's $500 million investment as a critical down payment on a mixed delivery system that supports children, families, employers, communities, and our economy in multiple ways. Like many of you, CDF Minnesota heard in over 40 recent listening sessions across the entire state about the struggles families face finding stable, affordable, available care that they need in their communities to either enter or stay in the workforce, and the important role the Child Care Assistance Program has played in helping them succeed. Child care assistance is the largest form of child care support for low-income families and a vital, successful 2-generation program that reduces racial and geographic disparities by allowing families to work toward financial stability via employment or education. Despite increased need, since 2003, state investment in the basic sliding fee portion of the program has actually decreased by 37%, and 5,700 fewer families are served. The over 4,500 providers, half of them licensed family care providers, and 30,000 children that receive child care assistance each year are located in every single county in the state. With new House File 1 investments in child care assistance, we can make sure that no families are left on the waiting list, and many fewer child care businesses are expected to provide care at rates well below costs, jeopardizing their ability to expand or even to stay in business and provide high-quality care. Minnesota's reimbursement rates are out of step with many neighboring states and are out of federal compliance, jeopardizing federal funding if state action is not taken this session. So now I'd like to turn it over to Charisse, who will share some of her experience as a provider.
And please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Charisse Gabriel. I am the director of the St. Paul Eastside Early Childhood Learning Center. We are located not far from here, and we serve just under 100 students. About 40% of them are low income, and I am here on behalf of the State Alliance of YMCAs. I must constantly explain to parents that child care assistance alone isn't enough. Not surprisingly, many of these parents are absolutely floored to learn that despite the fact that they finally got the job that can help keep their families stable, despite the fact that they qualify for assistance, despite days spent navigating multiple systems, despite all of this, these working mothers and fathers will still have to find a way to bridge the gap between reimbursement rates and the actual cost of child care. Sadly, many of these conversations end with parents telling me that they cannot make it work, their faces downstricken. Everything they have strived to build falls apart. Raising child care assistance rates is critical to the supply of child care as well. Low pay for teachers has created a very real and difficult staffing shortage. This impacts our ability to open more classrooms and increase access for families. In fact, YMCAs have empty classrooms across the state just sitting there, ready to serve children, but we can't hire and retain quality staff at the wages that we offer. Increasing child care assistance rates would give us more resources to pay staff. Believe me, we want to put every new dollar possible towards paying teachers more. They deserve it for their critical role in educating our children. This is not babysitting. This is early childhood education. If we want the results that promises, we need to pay for it. Please vote for this bill. Please vote for the children of our state, their parents, and the professionals who serve them. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Gabriel. Any questions for Ms. Fitzpatrick or Ms. Gabriel? And seeing none, okay, thank you so much. We'll ask Mr. Lasnas and Ms. Faber to come up. I know Ms. Faber especially had quite a long drive, I'm aware. And I believe they're going to be discussing the early learning scholarship portion of the bill. And so whichever of you would like to go first, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed. Mr. Lasnas, looks like
you're
going to go
first. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm John Lasnas, Executive Director of Families First in Minnesota in Rochester. It was a lovely drive up today. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts on early learning scholarships. Demand for scholarships is high. We have more than 600 children on our waiting lists across southern Minnesota, three counties in the Twin Cities, and five in Lake Mille Lacs that we serve in our program. The scholarship program currently focuses investment in high-quality early childhood for 3- and 4-year-olds living at 185% of poverty. Because of such high demand, most new scholarships go to children in four priority areas: children of keen parents, children in foster care, those in need of protective services, and those who have been homeless in the last 24 months. Many poor families that don't meet those criteria go without scholarships. We believe increased investment in scholarships is money well spent. We hear of the challenges families face on a daily basis and know that a scholarship can be the difference between a parent staying in the workforce and having to stay home. We also appreciate the interest in focusing the new investment in children birth to age 3. These are the most critical years in a child's brain development, and investing at an early age can provide a lifetime of paybacks. Finally, we believe increasing investment in early childhood is vital for another reason. The industry itself is struggling mightily. Our agency opened a nonprofit child care center late last year. We know the business. We could coach childcare providers through our childcare aware contract. Yet even those in our agency weren't prepared for the challenges in staffing this center. We have yet to find staff for our toddler classroom. Despite being short almost 1,000 childcare slots in Rochester, we're unable to reach our center's capacity because we can't find staff. Childcare is one of the lowest paying professions in our nation, yet its customers are some of our most precious resources. Investing in scholarships can help families meet childcare and early education needs, but it can also increase the funding available to pay childcare workers a livable wage. Relatively speaking, scholarships are a small investment in children. With this money, it would only be a five-year investment that could set up children for a lifetime of success. We need workers ready to compete in a global economy. Early education can set children up for a lifetime of higher earnings. We're eager to see this program grow to meet the needs of the families we serve. Current funding only allows us to award priority children. This leaves hundreds of children on our wait list for almost a year. It is likely with additional funds we would be able to serve not only priority children, but those non-priority children birth to three that apply. We would need intentional outreach, especially in our rural counties, to identify the eligible children and programs with availability. We're ready to meet that challenge. By maintaining access to programs with 1- and 2-star ratings, we believe we can find placement for these young children. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Faber, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Barb Faber, and I'm from White Earth. I'm a tribal member, but I'm the CEO of Indigenous Visioning. And I thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. I'm the former administrator for the tribe, White Earth's child care and early childhood program. And I had the extreme pleasure of administering the early learning scholarship, as we were one of the four transformation zone sites for the state's Race to the Top. We, in White Earth, we did our own licensing. We had tribal licensing. And we also administered child care assistance through the Child Care Development Block Grant. And so when we were allowed to administer the early learning scholarships, that funding provided important gap funding for children and families who did not meet the child care assistance qualifications. So it was very flexible and it met the family's needs. And prior to the Race to the Top funding, we had approximately 15 to 16 tribally licensed child care providers. And when we became a site, we also promoted and supported our providers to become parent aware rated. And it was a wonderful thing. Our providers, while they were at first were reluctant for something new, they eventually embraced it. And we also were allowed to, able to recruit new child care providers. Currently, White Earth has 22 tribally licensed child care providers, and 20 of those are parent aware rated. Children coming from our parent aware rated child care sites, they were ready for kindergarten. Parents loved how fast their children were learning, and we heard from many of the local kindergarten teachers that children, they could tell the children coming from our child care sites because they came to school ready. And they didn't have to play catch-up, but they were ready to learn. Early learning scholarships, we heard from numerous parents who were extremely appreciative for early learning scholarships because it allowed them to go to school, find funding, and it was flexible. So it met the family's needs. And in rural Minnesota, that's very important because families have to take their children to providers. And, while there are some schools there with pre-K, it's mostly child care providers that parents need. And I was also a former chair of the National Indian Child Care Association for many years, and we worked with many states. And I was very, very proud to have Minnesota have the quality rating system, parent aware, because other states, some states that I worked with did not have it. And so when Parent Aware became available, it was extremely helpful to children and families and our child care providers. And I think that's all. Thank you for...
Thank you so much, Ms. Faber. Any questions for Mr. Losnes or Ms. Faber? And seeing none, thank you so much. I'm going to ask Ms. McCauley to come up now. So we've heard about, so this is an area, Ms. McCauley, I think, is going to be speaking about the retained grants, which we heard about last year, but about the TEACH grants, which we had not heard about. And so, Ms. McCauley, if you can identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann McCauley. I serve as Executive Director of Child Care Aware of Minnesota, and we are the current administrator for both the TEACH Early Childhood Scholarship Program and the Retain Workforce Retention Program. You have one-page handouts in your packets that go into some of the history and the details, so I'll just hit the highlights. As you've heard through testimony in this committee and elsewhere, the early childhood field is challenged by poor wages and high turnover. It's also a workforce that is hard-pressed to afford the cost of higher education, despite a desire by many to achieve this goal. The TEACH Early Childhood Scholarship Program is a national model that is licensed in 20 states to help early childhood and school-age professionals in both center-based and family child care home settings increase their levels of education, compensation, and commitment to the field by earning college credits and degrees. This program began in Minnesota in 2002 and has helped over 1,000 early educators attain their early childhood certification or degrees to date. TEACH scholarships currently cover 85% of the cost of tuition and books for up to 18 semester credits per year. The remainder is covered by the recipient and their place of employment. Recipients also receive a travel stipend and release time and a raise or one-time bonus upon completion. Recipients then commit to remaining in their place of employment for at least 1 year after each scholarship end date. Since these early educators are attending school while still working, it may take them several years to attain their degree, so there is continuity of staffing both during the time they're in their education and for 1 year after each contract. The Retain Grant Program started in Minnesota in 2003 to provide a bonus to those who've been working full-time for at least 1 year in their current position and have already completed a CDA certificate or an associate, bachelor's, or master's degree in early childhood or a related field. And it does exactly what the name implies or seeks to do that. We want to retain our early childhood educators in their place of employment. We offer two different rounds of retain bonuses each year. One is for center-based child care and one is for family child care. And bonuses range from $500 to $3,500 depending on the applicant's career lattice step education level. These bonuses can be used to cover professional or personal expenses that impact a provider's ability to meet their needs. Since 2003, we've awarded these bonuses to over 2,000 early childhood professionals. In a recent evaluation of the Retain program by Child Trends, 92% of those surveyed indicated that the retained bonus was enough to help them, and surveyed recipients most commonly described the funds as helpful for purchasing goods and resources, either for personal use or for their child care program. And you do also have a one-pager on some of the results of that evaluation. While private funding helped to fund both of these programs back in 2002-2003, the core funding for both TEACH and Retain for the past 15 years has come from the Federal Child Care and Development Block Grant, which comes through the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And this funding has fluctuated over time. What this means is that with the Retain program in particular, depending on the pool of applicants, we've turned away upwards of two-thirds of the providers who have applied during some rounds. And the TEACH Early Learning Scholarship Program has seen a steady increase in demand since its inception. Additional state funds would allow us to broaden and deepen the pool of early educators who receive TEACH scholarships and retain grants and add one more tool to the toolbox to address compensation and retention in the child care community.
Thank you, Ms. McCauley. Any questions for Ms. McCauley or questions about the retain or TEACH programs? I'll point out, as Ms. McCauley said, there are, I think, actually a total of four pieces of paper that I found in our handouts that relate to these programs. But any questions anybody has about them? And not seeing any questions. So, Ms. McCauley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll ask Ms. Keller and Ms. Moss then to come up. to talk about some of the evaluation pieces of the proposal. So members, you recall from Ms. Mock's presentation that the proposal contains an evaluation of the Parent Aware system, which is Minnesota's quality rating and improvement system for child care, and then also an evaluation, also kindergarten readiness assessment, because we want to make sure that to assess how all this is working out. So I'm not sure which one of you wishes to go first. I guess maybe Ms. Keller will have you start, unless you'd rather have Ms. Mosco, and then just whoever's going to go, identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed.
Absolutely. I won the coin toss.
You did.
So my name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Senior Vice President of Early Childhood Quality Development at Think Small. And I'm here as one of the co-conveners of the Early Childhood Crisis Work Group, which is a group of advocates and business leaders looking to address two very serious issues that every community in Minnesota is facing. And that is our achievement gap and our child care crisis. This work group came together to try to put proposals together and put them forward to address both of those issues, not one or the other, but really wanting to make sure that we were looking at those issues together. And so I am here specifically to talk about the Parent Aware evaluation. As you're hearing today, the various elements of our early childhood system are really built on the foundation of Parent Aware. And so we think it is vitally important to make sure that we are keeping the Parent Aware and looking at how it is working through a lens of continuous improvement. Is it working well? Where is it working well? Where are areas of opportunity? The early childhood education system is a very dynamic system. And so we want to make sure that it's working as intended and working in every community. And so with that, I just want to say we have done evaluations. They were privately funded. We had 8 evaluations over an 8-year period that were both philanthropically and privately funded. And so what we're looking to is actually put it into state statute so that we have an ongoing evaluation to answer the questions that were put into the language as described.
I think, Ms. Keller, it may be worth just doing a bit of a pause on, can you just back up a little bit on Parent Aware and just make sure that we're all solid on
Absolutely.
Kind of how it's being used? Because there's, I think, for many of us, the thought of having an evaluation of the system, whether you feel wonderful about it, you have lots of concerns, I think hopefully we all would agree there should be, that having that assessment evaluation be really helpful. But if you can just step back a bit, just make sure we're all solid on Parent Aware.
Yeah, I can do a little bit of a Parent Aware 101. So Parent Aware is the Minnesota State's quality rating and improvement system. Quality rating and improvement systems are something that almost every state in the nation actually have at this point. We're actually required by our Child Care Development Block Grant, which is what funds the Child Care Assistance Program, to have a quality rating and improvement system. And so in Minnesota, that is Parent Aware. Parent Aware was very specifically designed with the lens of empowering families with information on how to choose the child care that best, or the early learning programming that best meets their family's needs. And so as we designed the program and evaluated it, again, over those first few years, we were trying to look at what were the fewest number of indicators that were most aligned with school readiness practices to make sure that children had the skills, knowledge, experiences to not only be ready for school, but really be ready for life. And so over time, we are constantly looking at, do we have the right set of indicators? Do we have the right supports for providers to be able to meet those indicators? Are we providing parents with the information they need to be able to understand those various indicators and how to make those choices. Again, we know that parents are ultimately every child's best teacher, and so we need to empower them with that information to be able to make those choices, and those choices may change over time. So what may work for them as an infant may be a different choice when they're 4, and so we want to make sure parents have that information.
Okay, good. Thank you. I think Ms. Moss is going to be talking about the kindergarten readiness assessment. So before we move to her, are there questions that folks have about the Parent Aware evaluation in the bill? It's in Article 2, Section 1, just to make sure in case. There'll be other chances too, of course, but just in case. Okay, so Ms. Moss, we'll turn to you if you can identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Erica Moss. I'm the executive director of an early education-oriented organization called Close Gaps by 5. We're a business-led organization. We've been active in this space for over a decade, and we're really excited to be here today to share our support for many of the provisions in the bill, among them early learning scholarships, home visiting, among others. And today I'm going to talk specifically about the kindergarten entry assessment provision in the bill. Our organization is part of the work group that Ms. Keller mentioned, and one of the recommendations of that group, and in fact a recommendation that the Office of the Legislative Auditor made to the legislature in 2018, is to implement a statewide kindergarten readiness assessment. This is an assessment that happens for kindergartners as they come into their kindergarten year. It's a formative assessment, so it gives information to teachers about where those children are in their development, and it can also give information back to the early childhood programs that those kids came from. So we are really excited about the idea of having this kind of an assessment in Minnesota's system, not only because of the benefit that it can give children and their teachers, kindergarten teachers working with them, but also the information that it can give this emerging early childhood system that we have in Minnesota. As you all on this committee are learning, there are lots of different moving parts and pieces, lots of different investments, and really what's happened over our time in this space over the last 10 years is that we're developing a system. We're developing a much more intentional system for supporting our young children. It's absolutely what we need to do. It's you know, policies and investments that are responsive to what research says about children's development, about our gaps. But as we develop that system and as we're making these investments, it's also important to undergird that system with some basic infrastructure for understanding what's happening, what kinds of experiences are children having in their early childhood years, how are our investments and policies working, what changes do we need to make to continuously improve. And as somebody who comes up here every year and talks to you all about how important these investments are, we want to make sure that as advocates, we're also bringing forward ideas for these kinds of, for building into the system accountability, as with the kindergarten entry assessment. So we're happy to lend our support, happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. And I'll just note for folks, so currently there is this voluntary assessment that we're spending, I think it's a couple $100,000 per year. Is that, maybe you can just talk a little bit about the transition from what we're doing now to what would be happening under the proposal, Ms. Moss.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. Currently there is about, I believe, a $281,000 annual investment that the legislature is making in what Chair Pinto just described correctly as a voluntary participation kindergarten entry assessment effort. Excuse me. What the proposal in House File 1 would do is scale that up to a statewide assessment assessing every incoming kindergartner and making that information available, again, to understand what's happening in the system, for parents to understand what's happening with their children. And so it would be moving from an assessment that's done in some places to an assessment that's done everywhere. Briefly, the way that it works is the Department of Education has identified four assessment tools that they have approved. Those tools are aligned with the Early Childhood Indicators of Progress and with kindergarten standards. And districts would be able to choose from those four tools, the assessment that they would like to use, and would get support from the department for implementing the assessment. And then the results would be reported through the early childhood, state early childhood
longitudinal data system.
Yes.
Stunning. Okay, good. Thank you. Was there something else you can add?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right, good. Any other questions regarding the kindergarten? I think in the bill, the kindergarten readiness assessment. Any other questions regarding that from anybody? And not seeing any. Okay. Well, I'll thank both of you. I think at this point we're going to talk about the family child care regulatory modernization, I think is the term that's in there. And I think Representative Katiza Witun, the thought on that is that we can have the co-chair of the Family Child Care Task Force speak on our behalf. Unfortunately, she's at the table, since that is Representative Wasilewicz.
A happy coincidence, Mr. Chair.
Indeed, that's very nice. So, Representative Wasilewicz, if you can just talk with us a bit, because my understanding is that this does come out of the work of the task force that you co-chair. Maybe just, we have not had a formal report from that task force as of yet. If you can just talk a little bit about the work you've done and how this comes out of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am, as Representative Pinto said, I am the co-chair of the Family Child Care Task Force, along with Senator Mary Kiffmeyer in the Senate. And we have been meeting since September of last year to talk about the duties that were outlined in statute from last year. So we've been meeting there, and Representative Damuth is also on the task force.
Right.
And so one of the recommendations that will be coming out later in the report this year, that's due March 1st, is to do some modernization of the regulations for the family child care area. So a couple of things that the Family Child Care Task Force decided they wanted to pursue were what's known as a tiered violation system. So essentially having different tiers of violations, so similar to what's known as a fix-it ticket versus a correction order, so different tiers, violations based on the risk to the health and safety of the children. And then also an abbreviated inspection process. So for those providers who are meeting kind of these guidelines that if they have, and this is what we're going to be developing as a system, but if they meet certain guidelines, they're able to have an abbreviated inspection process as opposed to the longer inspection process that takes place. For those providers who are meeting guidelines and doing a good job, they would have an abbreviated inspection process. So this House File 1 would dedicate some money to starting this process. And we have had conversations with the National Association for Regulatory Administration on kind of what that process looks like and laying out kind of the stakeholder engagement process for each of those pieces. And then another piece of this would be actually to update the family the licensing standards as part of this. So with the tiered violation system, we want to make sure that we're basing that on the standards we're going to use going forward. So a piece of this would be also be kind of updating those standards, the rules, so that we have some more current standards, since these haven't been updated for several decades.
Since the 1980s, I believe. Okay, good, thank you. Anything, Representative Damuth, that you want to add as a member of the task force?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I don't have anything to add at this time. We look forward to that report coming out by March 1st.
Good, excellent, thank you so much. Yeah, and then any questions anybody has for Representative Wasilewicz or regarding this Section 10 of Article 2 regarding that? And not seeing any at all. Okay, good. Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz, then. So at this time, members, we have some other testifiers who are going to be here scheduled for this evening, and then we also had told members of the public that that we would have public testimony this evening. So I think what we're going to do at this point, then, is to reconvene then. I want to remind anyone who does wish to provide public testimony this evening to connect with the you can sign up with the page and to do that to get added to the list. I also want to ask members to be sure not to throw away the papers and materials that you have, because we will bring them back this evening. And so we will be, unless there's, are there any questions I should ask before we reconvene? And I am not seeing any. And so we will be back together. We'll be back together at 5:30 p.m. back in this very room. And with that, we are in recess. Thank you. Okay, I'm calling to order. Again, the reconvening of the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. I think we've confirmed, as we knew before, that we are not morning people, because there's a heck of a lot more energy in the room now than there was this morning, which we already knew from last year, but we've had that confirmed now. So Representative Katiza Watun, we were walking through your presentation of your bill of the of House File 5, House File 1, pardon me. And so, members, I think that the next presentation we had was on the family, friend, and neighbor portion of the bill. And so I want to call up the mayor of Richfield, Maria Regan-Gonzalez. And I think that she's going to be joined by her own state representative, who is Representative Mike Howard. So if they can come up and join Representative Katiza Watun at the testifier's table. This is excellent constituent service by Representative Howard. Stick close to his constituents. Madam Mayor, if you can identify yourself for the record and then please proceed. I don't know if you're going to be going first or Representative Howard, but if you are, then please identify yourself and proceed. Okay,
Looks like Representative Howard is going to turn it over. Good evening, everybody. My name is Maria Regan-Gonzalez. I am the proud mayor of Richfield, Minnesota. I am also here as a co-founder of La Red Latina de Educación Temprana. We are a family friend and neighbor child care provider network of over 300 Latina family friend and neighbor child care providers. So is it fine if I just begin?
Please, yeah, great. Please proceed.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for offering me the opportunity to speak. I greatly appreciate it. There are handouts that you all have about La Red Latina and the work that we do in family friend and neighbor providers. And what we do is we're very focused on developing community-based solutions to support healthy childcare and child development as well as learning early learning opportunities for our communities, specifically for children whose families choose and or need family, friend, and neighbor childcare. So that's aunties, brothers, and, you know, sometimes it's siblings, actually, but grandparents as well, who aren't necessarily in childcare centers but are really at home taking care of their friends and their family members. I'm also here representing the Minnesota Prenatal to Three Coalition, and I just want to express my gratitude to you all for the Family, Friend, and Neighbor Provider Grant Program as it's written in the amendment. And across Minnesota, as many of you know, family, friend, and child care providers are many times the first choice for a lot of our families, and oftentimes also not necessarily the first choice, but because other child care options are not affordable to our families, are not culturally appropriate or inclusive of our families. There's many other barriers to quality child care, and family, friend, and neighbor is oftentimes maybe the only option, a very affordable option, and is a lot of times what we choose first, especially in many of our cultural communities in terms of child care for our children. We also know that 40% of our children across the state are being taken care of in family friend by a family, friend, and neighbors, particularly our infants and our toddlers. So almost half of our infants and toddlers in the state are in FFN care. Yet, we also know that there is very little support for FFNs across Minnesota, and this is very concerning to us, which is why we started our network. We hope that this grant program will help in ensuring that every Minnesotan child has access to high-quality care and learning experiences, regardless of the child care setting that they're in. And I know that we have a very short time, and I'm more than happy to provide any answers to the questions you may have about La Red Latina or the work that we're doing. But thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight.
Thank you much, Mayor. Grateful to have you. And I do want to highlight for members, because I feel like in our committee we haven't talked about this quite as much, that a full, as you said, 40% of our young kids are in the care of family, friend, and neighbors. That's a whole part that of this this work that we haven't talked about a lot, and so this is an opportunity to provide that support. Representative Howard, do you have something you want to say relating to this?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll just be really brief and thank Mayor Regan-Gonzalez and for sharing her perspective, and for to Representative Katiza Watoon for including this important amendment in the bill, and also to the members of LARED that are here. They're doing amazing work in our communities, and we at the state need to support the community solutions that come forward. LARED's an amazing example of that, and we should be trying to build those kinds of community solutions across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And Representative Howard or Representative Katiza Watoon, can you just remind us briefly of the grant program? It's $1 million for grants to support and work with family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. Just either way. Representative Howard?
Mr. Chair, yeah, this provision would provide $1 million grant for communities to set up these child care networks or to support them. And Mayor Regan-Gonzalez or others could talk a little bit about what that kind of support looks like. But by doing this way, we can support the community solutions that are tailor-fit to those needs. And currently, there is not that level of support for our FFN networks, and this can be a vehicle to do so.
All right, thank you. Maybe Representative Katiza Watoon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I wanted to kind of piggyback off of what you said about providers being culturally sensitive or culturally knowledgeable, a good fit for some of the care that we're looking for our children in different cultural communities in the metro area, outstate Minnesota. And I think that being able to provide this sort of support for in-home care, family, friend, and neighbor care to make sure that parents have the ultimate choice about the care that's being given to their children is really critical.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions anybody has regarding the FFN portion of the bill? And not seeing any. And so I want to thank Mayor Gonzalez for being here, Regan-Gonzalez, and Representative Howard as well. And so we'll have now come up Ms. Holweger and Ms. Anderson. We'll have you both come up if we can. Thank you so much to both of you. And so, members, we're going to be hearing in the next few testifiers about some of the grants through DEED, the Minnesota Initiative Foundation, and through First Children's Finance will be coming after this discussion. And again, pointing you to the spreadsheet in the bill that lays out the proposed expenditures in these areas, and then these are, we kind of walk through the part of the bill as well. So I'm not sure who wants to go first. I think I've got Ms. Holweger coming first. I'm not sure which one of you that is. Over there, okay. And if you can identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your statement.
Thank you, Mr.
Please,
Chairman.
Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Jenny Holweger, and I am the CEO of the Candiohi County Family YMCA in Willmar, Minnesota. I'm here to provide an example of what can be accomplished in a short amount of time with the right assistance to help alleviate the child care shortage. Thank you for letting me tell the story of the Candiohi County YMCA and what can happen when great people and organizations come together with a common goal. In December of 2018, Troy Peterson, one of my staff members, and I met with Representative Dave Baker to discuss how to help alleviate the child care shortage in Candiohi County. The first children's finance study of childcare in our county showed that there was a shortage of 770 spots. 170 of those were in Willmar, and 350 of those were between Spicer and New London. The shortage was affecting the economy and life of our county residents. Employees were in short supply. People were not moving to the area because they couldn't find childcare. Parents were giving up jobs to stay home with children. The YMCA had the resources and the infrastructure to operate an additional child care center, but we didn't have the resources to build or renovate space or purchase the needed startup equipment that is needed for that type of an operation. Dave, of course, jumped right in and was on board, and that afternoon we were looking at spaces that may be available to accommodate a child care center. Before a space could actually be committed to, we needed to raise the money for startup. A group of committed volunteers from Willmar, Spicer, and New London came together to guide the project and fundraise alongside our YMCA board of directors. With over $800,000 needed for this project, we knew that there was no one entity that could fund the entire project. So we started to raise money. By the mid-July, we had raised over $500,000 in support from individuals, businesses, community organizations, and the cities of Spicer and New London, which was the threshold we needed to start construction. The spaces we had considered were all readily available, but they would need renovations. We chose a space in the Green Lake Mall in Spicer, Minnesota, knowing it would revitalize the space we chose, as well as the mall. Like many malls, it was starting to deteriorate, losing stores, and we knew it needed a little oomph to help that small town get its mall back. So there was some convenience factors with the mall. The mall was able to provide a grocery store for parents and a Snap Fitness Center. So they were able to do kind of the one-stop shop with their child being in child care with the Y at the mall. Construction began July 30th of 2019. To help the efforts, grants were also submitted. One of those grants was the deed grant. The deed grant helped to purchase the furnishings and curriculum materials and equipment. With $50,000 from the deed grant and leveraging over $30,000 in matching community donations, we were able to furnish the entire five-room center, two infant rooms, two toddler rooms, and one preschool room to serve 82 children. The YMCA Early Learning Center officially opened on December 23, 2019, 1 year after the first initial discussion. Currently, 38 children are attending, and we have 45 total enrolled. There are 7 new babies starting in March. The center is staffed for the number of children enrolled and grows as the enrollment grows. Enrollment will increase to 82 over the next 9 months to meet the license capacity. It is anticipated that the license capacity will grow in 2021 to 90, as we will be changing one of the infant rooms over to a preschool room to accommodate the flow of children. We anticipate we will have added about 7 full-time employees and 23 part-time employees to the economy in Spicer directly. On behalf of the Minnesota State Alliance of YMCAs, I do want to point out that we do support the HF1 Article 3 Section 10 grants for child care of $10 million to increase supply of quality child care providers to support economic development. that goes directly along with staffing. Indirectly, parents of children enrolled will be able to seek or continue work because of the extra child care spots we were able to provide to the county. So employers now can start to have a few more options for hiring staff. None of this would have been possible without a broad base of support. Our rural area is extremely generous, as are many other small communities in Minnesota. We had over 80 pledges, donations, and grant resources come in amounts from $10 to $100,000 and one baby blanket. The DEET grant was valuable to this project and provided important foundational elements to help us serve the children and families in Candiohi County. As a current child care provider, I support the continuation of the DEET and the MIF grants to expand child care availability.
Thank you for your testimony. And why don't we hear from Ms. Anderson now, if you can just identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Diana Anderson, and I am the president and CEO of the Southwest Initiative Foundation. Our region includes the 18 counties and two Native nations of Southwest Minnesota, and we are one of the six Minnesota initiatives. We're independent nonprofit serving Greater Minnesota. And on behalf of the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, I'm here in support of House File 1, which includes child care investments and supports that will allow us to continue the work that we've begun in our region. Our Minnesota Initiative Foundation colleagues are each approaching child care work based on the region's unique needs. We're grateful for your support of this work last year through a legislative appropriation, and we appreciate the flexibility allowed for each foundation to address specific community-based solutions, which include both family and center-based child care providers. These dollars have a catalytic effect in addressing the shortage when combined with other dollars and resources. Southwest Initiative Foundation has focused our child care work in five areas, including project investment and technical assistance, community planning, professional development, public policy, and public relations. In Southwest Minnesota alone, we have leveraged well over $1 million in other non-state funding from private philanthropy, private investments, agencies, individual donors, and business financing and federal microlending resources to support it. We funded gap, feasibility, and market analysis, shared child care case studies, hosted community conversations and parent-aware trainings, provided technical assistance and financing to entrepreneurs and organizations. We've hosted new annual Kids First Conference in Granite Falls for more than 300 providers and other local trainings, ensuring providers can access the professional development and education they need close to home during non-business hours. Southwest Initiative Foundation has supported a total of 103 projects, conversations, and trainings in Southwest Minnesota. We're using an inclusive community planning process and engaging diverse groups of stakeholders, working community by community to address specific needs and leverage opportunities. A key component of our approach is engagement of the business community, as this is the fastest growing economic development issue impacting our region's businesses and their ability to attract and retain, the talent that they need. This collaborative approach, as you heard Ms. Holwerger say, has helped us create or retain 1,000 slots in both family-based and center-based opportunities here in Southwest Minnesota. And Mr. Chair and committee, we thank you for your time and deeply appreciate your support.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I do want to highlight for members that we did allocate funding to both of these programs last year, and I believe it was $750,000 each. I think maybe $1 million for DEED, $750,000 for the Minnesota Initiative Foundations. And if anybody, somebody notes that I have that wrong, please note that. But in any case, approximately that amount. And to just note that the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, of course, operate solely in Greater Minnesota. And then these DEED grants, as proposed, are 50% Greater Minnesota, 50% in the metro. So we want to make sure to be supporting the provision of early care and learning throughout the state. Are there any questions for our testifiers or anything that Representative Katiza Witun wants to add about this at all? Just looking to see if we have anything from anybody. So, okay. We will thank both of you very much for your testimony and for traveling here and providing your input. And then we've got the folks from First Children's Finance up next, Ms. Hagel-Braid and Ms. Pearl. And thank you again. Hello. So please identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Good evening, Chair Pinto and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Suzanne Pearl. I'm the Minnesota Director for First Children's Finance. Heidi Hagel-Braid was not able to join us tonight. She's being a hockey mom, so that's where she is. First Children's Finance is a national nonprofit organization headquartered in Minnesota. Our organization focuses on the business side of childcare, ensuring that childcare businesses remain financially sustainable. Our staff are located in six rural Minnesota communities, as well as the Twin Cities metro area. They work side by side with childcare providers, both family childcare and childcare centers, helping them assess and address their financial needs. And through our Rural Childcare Innovation Program, we work directly with communities to help them assess their childcare shortage and find right-sized, locally created solutions to address that shortage. First Children's Finance also provides access to capital to childcare entrepreneurs. Since establishing our loan fund in 1997, we have loaned nearly $12 million to childcare businesses, including $3.5 million to childcare programs in Greater Minnesota. As Minnesota struggles with childcare deserts, the state of Minnesota can play an important role in providing capital to incentivize new childcare businesses and to grow the footprint of programs that are ready to expand. In order to address the shortage of childcare in Minnesota, I encourage you to consider investing resources to create the conditions that are supportive of childcare lending, including adequate capital from public and private sources, guarantees or credit enhancements, operational dollars for highly specialized technical assistance, strong portfolio management infrastructure, and robust evaluation to measure impact. In closing, I ask for your support of House File 1. I believe this funding has the potential to change the landscape of childcare across Minnesota, increasing the availability of financially sustainable childcare for families and helping to create vibrant local economies. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Pearl. Any questions from Ms. Pearl or anything further about First Children's Finance? And I'm not seeing any. And Ms. Pearl, thank you so much for being here then. And then finally, in terms of the presentation of the bill, we've got some folks from Women Venture, Ms. Wyatt and Mr. Andrews. And come on up. And after this, we'll be having public testimony. If you're here for public testimony, you've not had a chance to identify yourself for that, if you can let the pages know that you're here, if you're not already on our list. And then please, I'm not sure who's going to be going first, but whoever is, you can identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed. So, Ms. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elaine Wyatt, and I am the CEO of Women Venture. And I, for those of you who have not or don't know anything about Women Venture or may not be familiar with our work is really focused on helping women start and grow businesses that are profitable and therefore become sustainable and an asset to themselves and their families. We really work in what we call the four pillars of economic development. We do in-depth training. We provide access to capital, expert advice, and a community of support. We started working in the childcare space really because our clients directed us so. We started seeing a lot of women come through our doors who wanted to start childcare businesses. They are typically women who are making somewhere between $8 and $12 an hour in the industry, saw that their centers that they were working in were profitable and their owners seemed to be making a significant amount of profit, but they weren't sharing in that profit. And so it's really that journey that we stepped on with them to find a way to create childcare businesses that we're going to produce at minimum a living wage, which we're really defining between $20 and $25 an hour for the women to take out of those businesses. And so we're going to talk a little bit about our in-depth training work and where we're at in that space. And Jeff Andrews from our team is going to talk about that.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Wyatt. And Mr. Andrews, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good evening, Chair Pinto, members of the community. Again, my name is Jeff Andrews. I serve as the Director of Program Innovation at Women Venture. I also serve as a early childhood business consultant for Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. And for the past 5 years, I've worked around the state to support communities working to address their local child care shortages. I've also spent countless hours working with hundreds of individual business owners of licensed family child care businesses and child care centers on improving business outcomes to ensure profitability and sustainability. While this work is focused strictly on business outcomes, my passion comes from a place to support providers so they're in the best possible position to provide high-quality outcomes for the children under their care. Throughout my travels and work, one thing is clear. Communities around the state are desperately seeking actionable solutions to support local growth of child care options, as well as ways to retain providers currently providing child care within their local towns and cities. In communities such as International Falls, Medelia, Albert Lea, along with local neighborhoods right here in the Twin Cities described as child care deserts, all need and want access to the same level quality of training and support to address their local challenges. At Women Venture, we've already successfully piloted and launched a multi-stage approach to accomplish this. Through online delivery and face-to-face options, we are leveling access to a pathway of both exploration and launch of new child care businesses. This includes a 2.5-hour session called Exploring Child Care that we're able to deliver virtually. We're also providing a 12-session family child care business essentials course for those wanting to start a family child care business, as well as a 20-session course for those individuals wanting to start a child care center. Once participants are ready to launch, we provide access to capital to start their business, along with business consultation and support that their business ensures that their business starts with a strong foundational model that aligns with their desired service offering. In numerous conversations with licensors and community groups looking to support these new businesses, I've heard many times that they wish there were additional options that could support the smaller numbers of needs sometimes found in communities in greater Minnesota with the same level of quality and support that their larger city counterparts benefit from based on scale. While no one solution will resolve our challenges of giving every child access to high-quality early childhood education, your support of this bill will further expand the opportunity to communities of all sizes in all parts of the state to support those who want to provide this critical service in need. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. And I just want to clarify that this would be a resource that would be available to providers across the entire state, no matter where they are. I think the thought is it would be available an online program. Is that correct?
Maybe, that's correct. Mr. Yes, Anderson. We've already actually piloted the online Exploring Child Care session. And the beauty of that session has been, frankly, giving people a reality of what the child care business is like. And we've actually seen folks that have self-selected out as part of that, which we think actually is a good thing, because we want to be focused on those who can be sustainable and be professional and provide those quality outcomes for children.
Maybe in the rest of the bill, too, we can be setting a bar to make it be showing a down payment to make it more sustainable in the future as well.
Absolutely.
So good. Thank you. Professor Katiza, between you, somebody want to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to draw everybody's attention. There's the course catalog of sorts. It should be included in your folders.
Oh.
It was added later on this afternoon, so you might have not seen it this morning. And so the course overview that he was just speaking about is the top box where they kind of learn about a general overview about beginning a child care business. And then after that, many of the providers or potential providers have said, you know, maybe this isn't for me after all.
And so this is the sheet, members, that says exploring child care and then family child care business essentials 12 and a series of sessions that describes it. There's quite a lot of material in support of a number of the items that we've talked about. So I want to direct members' attention to them. So thank you. Questions regarding the Women Venture portion of the proposal? And not seeing any, so I will thank both the testifiers on behalf of the committee. Thank you so much for being here. And Representative Katisa-Witun, I think that concludes your presentation of the bill for now. I know you'll be standing for questions later, but I think we're going to turn to public testimony now then. So I'll invite up Talmay Zhang from the City of St. Paul. There she is. And so once you settle in, you can identify yourself, please, and then proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Talmay Zhang, and I'm the Director of Intergovernmental Relations for the City of St. Paul in Mayor Melvin Carter's office. So, Mr. Chair, the mayor wants to apologize that he cannot be here personally. We have a letter that he's written, and if you can pass it.
We'll have the page when you get a chance. Head back across the room. Thank you.
So I'm going to read some of the letter, and not the entire letter, but it says, the City of St. Paul greatly values early childhood education. We have invested in and are committed to our programs, such as College Bound St. Paul, Sprockets, Families First Housing Pilot, and the St. Paul Children's Collaborative. On behalf of our community, I ask you all to support House File 1 to further advance the city's investments. St. Paul's youngest learners deserve more support. St. Paul's poverty rates are the highest among children. Overall, 34% of the St. Paul's 3- and 4-year-olds live below the federal poverty line. There are currently nearly 950 children on waiting lists seeking school-based, pre-K, Head Start, child care assistance, and early learning scholarships. They cannot receive due to lack of funding. And these waiting lists do not include families who have simply given up hope of receiving the support they need. Finding child care is also difficult and expensive. Minnesota is the third most expensive state for child care, putting strain on families across St. Paul and often leading to gender inequities when one parent stays home. Early childhood education is one of the best investments St. Paul can make in the overall health, well-being, and future success of children and their families. Early childhood education helps eliminate opportunity and achievement gaps, decreases the poverty rate through supportive parents, and provides an economic boost for families who no longer have to worry about the expenses of child care. High quality early education boosts our economy thanks to more stable workforce, thus attracting families and businesses looking to call St. Paul home. A strong system will support families in the transition to early elementary school. It's a win-win situation for our community.
I might ask you to wrap up if you can, just because I want to keep our public testimony short if we can. Thank you.
I'm actually done.
Okay. There we go. Worked out
so
well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you. Good. Thank you so much, Ms. Zhang. And members, if you have questions along the way for testifiers, let me know. But otherwise, we'll just keep rolling. And so I think Mr. Gehrman, we'll have you come up. And then to let folks know, we're going to have Cindy Cunningham after him. And I'll just keep rolling. Okay, and so please identify yourself for the record once you get settled in, and then please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rich Gehrman. I'm the Executive Director of Safe Passage for Children of Minnesota. And as some of you know, we're an advocacy organization promoting more resources and improved practices in child protection and foster care. While our primary focus is on child protection and foster care, we also have for several years now strongly supported early learning scholarships and targeted home visiting programs. And that is because while we want the child welfare system to be as effective as possible for those who need it, the best outcome is that children are not maltreated in the first instance, and therefore they and their families don't get reported to child protection or get into the system at all. And numerous research studies have shown, as I'm sure you're hearing, that early learning and home visiting programs are the two services that have the biggest impact on actually reducing child maltreatment. For example, our own Art Reynolds at the University of Minnesota showed that children who are attending the Chicago Child Parent Centers had 52% fewer substantiated child maltreatment reports. And Green et al. In a study demonstrated that children who were receiving Early Head Start had 29% fewer substantiated maltreatment reports. Our colleague Sasha Klein at Michigan State showed that children who needed early childhood education but didn't get it were 3 times more likely to be placed in foster care within 18 months. Amaloy and Phillips showed that preschoolers in foster care who got ECE were 80% less likely to have a placement disruption. And as for targeted home visiting programs, Dumont et al. Showed that child protection recidivism decreased by a third from 60% to 40% for women who received Healthy Families America services. And of course, nurse home visiting programs have shown repeatedly a 52% reduction in child maltreatment in the overall population. So those are just a few of the studies, and I'm sure you will hear more. But the Great Start bill gives priority to the youngest children who are at the highest risk or who are already in foster care or child protection. So this bill will have a tremendously positive impact on the racial disparities in child protection and foster care that we're all concerned about, because it will reduce the number of families from those disproportionately represented communities who are getting reported to child protection in the first place, or will shorten their stays in child protection. So in our view, early learning scholarships and targeted home visiting are the two most important investments that the legislature can make to actually reduce child maltreatment in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And so we'll have Ms. Cunningham come up, and then Amy Wallstein will be after that, just as a heads up. And so please, Ms. Cunningham, just start whenever you're ready. If you identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Cindy Cunningham. I am a family child care provider in St. Paul, up the street a couple miles. I am also the public policy chair for McPinn, which is a 501c3 state association for family child care providers. Our main focus in public policy ends up being on the care and safety of children, of the viability of family child care as a business option and client option for parents, and then also on working with systems to help them make work for both families and the children and for family child care, and trying to intertwine all of those. The points that I'm just going to say we support and would like to see move forward is extending the time frame of program eligibility to the early learner scholarships. 8.22, I think, is the line. It's every 2 years we get to this point, and do we need to extend it so that it's not just 3- and 4-star rated programs? It's really imperative that parents have choice. The way the Parent Aware program has been being managed, it's not been advantageous or is a good business model for family providers to be in the higher star levels. There aren't clients, and the money motivation for reward is at the lower levels. Some of that is changing, and so I'm passionate about trying to make options for families to be in family child care by keeping that. It would be nice to see, instead of every 2 years sitting here having this conversation, if we had a threshold of a 40% eligible participant, eligible programs participating. So that would be a hope or a suggestion. The other is the just continued increase for Pathways 1 scholarship. That is what typically comes to family child care. We cannot do Pathways 2 because we can't manage the over the program piece of it. So Pathways 1 follows the family. And so that's really where the family child care gets impacted. Increased funding for the programs through all of the previous presenters, especially in the areas of course, family child care. When you put $2,000 on a grant for family child care and $10,000 in center, the family child care actually has a higher investment return. We don't have the overhead. We don't have all this, the bricks and mortar. We have much more of a continuity of care with the people that are there, the cultural response, the ability of parents to really choose that one fit and that one provider is much stronger at providers. So I would continue to ask that the DEED programs look to try to figure out how to craft that for the family child care. The other ones were on the retained programs, definitely needs increasing for availability for providers to be able to have those extra boosts. And then on the Section 10 on the modernization, no, I don't have it in front of me, on the licensing for family child care, that's been being talked about at a number of meetings I've been at over the years with DHS. It was brought up. I'm also on the task force for child care task force. It was brought up in the child care task force. What I read, we don't have an official stance of yes, this is the way or the how. We think that that tier system on licensing is definitely a direction that is best to go. Since it has been brought up at the task force, I would look to those that are at this committee to make the decisions and the impact about where that's best evaluated on those points. So
thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And again, if anybody has questions along the way in terms of members, speak up, please. Ms. Wallstein, thanks for coming up. And then Mr. Gumnit will be up after her.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Amy Wallstein. I'm the Education, Policy, and Workforce Development Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership, the trade association representing the CEOs and senior leadership of Minnesota's largest companies. We've had great testimony today, so I'll just share a few brief comments regarding House File 1. First, we'd like to thank Representative Batizotun and Chair Pinto for the focus in this bill on early learning scholarships. MBP members have been longstanding strong supporters of the early learning scholarship approach as a key strategy to closing opportunity gaps for our youngest learners. Expanding this successful program is very important, and we really thank you for that. One thing for the committee to consider as the bill moves forward through the process is to focus delivery on the current eligible population, including four-year-olds, and then expand to additional infants and toddlers. And second, we are thrilled with the kindergarten readiness assessment and linkage to longitudinal education data system in the bill. This is a very strong component of the bill, and we applaud its inclusion. We also strongly support the kindergarten readiness report that's required of MDE in Article 2, Section 3, and just encourage you to think about adding a due date for delivery of the report. So again, on behalf of MBP and our members, we want to thank the representative and committee members who brought this bill forward for the focus on early scholarships and kindergarten readiness in the bill, and we look forward to making progress on early learning this session. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So Mr. Gumnit, you're up, and then Ms. Sanford, you'll be up after that. And so you can, once you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members. My name is Daniel Gumnit, and I'm the CEO of People Serving People. I'm here on behalf of People Serving People as well as the Prenatal to Three Coalition of Minnesota, and we're obviously here in support of House File Number 1. People Serving People is the largest and most comprehensive shelter for children and families experiencing homelessness in the region. We're also the largest shelter for parenting youth aged 18 to 24. We're located in downtown Minneapolis. People Serving People is at the epicenter of childhood, youth, and family homelessness in the state of Minnesota. Even though People Serving People is an emergency shelter, our most intense focus and our greatest expenditures are on early education and parental engagement, which I know seems unusual, but we believe that is the greatest return on investment that we can make. We have four-star parent aware rated programs at our shelter and at our Center of Excellence. Often we are the first structured learning environment that children experiencing homelessness encounter. Every day, I see firsthand the terrible toll that homelessness and the trauma and toxic stress of homelessness takes on the healthy development of Minnesota's youngest children. But we also see the profound benefits that quality early education programs can provide to these children and families experiencing homelessness. It's absolutely necessary that children experiencing homelessness be ready for kindergarten so that they're reading at grade level by third grade. However, many children experiencing homelessness in Minnesota have significantly greater needs than their stably housed other children. It goes beyond the numbers and letters. Because homelessness creates so much trauma, children experiencing homelessness often need significant help developing crucial executive function skills, social-emotional skills such as impulse control, using words, sitting in a circle, raising one's hand, waiting in line. Our experience and research that we've done since the early 80s with the University of Minnesota demonstrate that trauma-informed, quality early learning programs can make a dramatic difference in the lives of children experiencing homelessness. And our families experiencing homelessness rely heavily on both the child care assistance program as well as the scholarship program to gain access to the programs that they need. So to conclude, we passionately believe that if we're going to permanently break the cycle of homelessness and poverty in the state of Minnesota, we need to expand access to child care assistance as well as early learning scholarships for children at the youngest age of the spectrum, prenatal to three. This prioritization is vital to reducing family homelessness, closing the educational opportunity gap, and developing our state's future workforce. So thank you very much for putting this bill forward.
Thank you for that strong statement. Thank you for being here. And so we'll have Ms. Sanford come up, and then Ms. Hopchinski will be up after that. So please identify yourself for the record once you're ready and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Claire Sanford. I'm the Government Relations Chair for the Minnesota Child Care Association, representing licensed child care centers across the state. And it is not 8 a.m. And for that reason alone, I'm excited to be here. But I'm really excited about House File 1. To quickly run through the many things we're excited about in House File 1, we like the grants and loans for provider support, particularly in Greater Minnesota. We have members looking to expand their programs in Greater Minnesota and are running up against the need for exactly these kinds of resources. We like the parent aware evaluation. We're longtime supporters of the rating system, but recognize the need for continuous quality improvement and how it supports child outcomes and providers. We really like the statewide kindergarten readiness assessment as well. Legislative auditor said do it. Yay, let's do it. Data, it's good. We support the family child care modernization effort, even though we represent centers, because centers are in need of similar regulatory updates, so we're really interested in watching them go through that process and see what we can learn, and all providers need to succeed. We're thrilled with the investments in teach and retain. It's great to see the child care, early childhood workforce crisis getting attention due to the efforts of a lot of people in this room, and those programs are very much necessary. So on to the bigger investment buckets. We're super thrilled to see the major investment in both scholarships and child care assistance in this bill and appreciate that HF1 does not pit these programs against each other. This bill not only brings us into minimum federal compliance, hopefully in time to prevent federal penalties from being assessed this fall, but also plans to use available resources to significantly bump up provider rates in the near term. We would like, however, more discussion on the permanent move in this language to a single statewide child care assistance rate. We are very supportive of increased resources for Greater Minnesota and just think we should evaluate the multiple options that are out there for how we do that. The statewide rate is one that hasn't gotten a lot of discussion at the legislature and is sort of new. Our board just got the chance to talk about it this morning. And even in the discussion we were able to have this morning, there was already varied opinions and concern about potential unintended consequences from both Metro and Greater Minnesota providers. So we just want to really be able to look at this and evaluate all the options available. So we'll continue to work with members and providers in Greater Minnesota around those items. Super also thrilled, I say thrilled a lot in this testimony, to have the new investment in early learning scholarships. Great to move eligibility to infants and toddlers. We all know that's the biggest brain development piece. Those are the most expensive years for parents. We would prefer if instead of permanently making scholarships only for birth to three, they would be birth to five. There are some scholarship stories from one of our member providers in your packets, and parents are not asking for only certain ages of their young children to be covered. They are asking for help for all of those pre-kindergarten years. And really appreciate the fact that the stated intention of House File 1 is to be considered a down payment on the ongoing needs and to continue working to secure desperately needed funds for our early childhood system across Minnesota. There are plenty of ways even a temporary increase of resources will have direct benefits. Number one, obviously, if we can help a young child now, why wouldn't we do it? And our workforce will really benefit even in the short term. On the day House File 1 was announced, several of our members immediately began brainstorming how could additional funds for child care assistance and scholarship be turned into income for staff, hiring bonuses, retention bonuses, temporary monthly wage supplements. Increasing the income of early childhood educators is our number one priority. Ideally, the resources continue, but that's where we want to put them. Don't worry, I'm wrapping up, Mr. Okay. Chair.
you could tell my expression, yes.
So in closing, there's plenty of discussion to have, and we're so thankful there's a bold, comprehensive birth to five plan on the table to drive that discussion. And just to end, our association president did a radio interview last week when this bill was kind of officially announced. And to quote him, he said, House File 1's release was, quote, probably the most historic and hopeful moment in early education in Minnesota. And there are a lot of people who feel that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sanford. And before we turn to Ms. Chinsky, I'll just note you had mentioned, Ms. Sanford had mentioned the single statewide rate, which it's true is not something that had gotten a lot of discussion up till this point today. And so just if and as members have questions regarding that, that's certainly something that we can get those questions answered in the shift, the proposed shift in House File 1 to have a single statewide rate for CCAP rather than the geographically varying rates we have right now. So just to sort of, just to raise that point for folks. Ms. Halachinsky, you're up, and then Ms. Swenson will be up after that. And so please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to testify. My name is Greta Halachinsky. This is my first time testifying.
You're doing great.
Thank you. I'm a toddler and preschool teacher here in St. Paul at Agape High School in Frogtown, which is a high school for adolescent parents. I have worked in early education for about 15 years, and I would love to talk about my students, but today I'm here to talk about my experiences as a teacher. My personal life, I'm a single parent of two boys, and we've lived in subsidized housing for almost 10 years now, which was not my plan. A couple years ago, I was approved for a mortgage, which we were really excited about, and around the same time, I had the opportunity to go back to school to finish my bachelor's degree. So I went to Metro State. There's an early childhood studies program there. I thought I knew a lot about kids, and I was wrong. I learned a lot of things to make my classroom better there. In my last year, I learned about the Retain Grant and applied for it, and I received it. So I was really excited about that and put it away to save for a down payment on a home. When I graduated from school, I was really excited to start in my classroom using all the things that I'd learned about brain development and bringing my students' culture into my classroom more. The bummer about graduating was that although the quality of my work went up, my personal life, the quality kind of went down. I didn't receive any kind of additional income for getting a BA. I was already a lead teacher, so I didn't get any more income. I now have student loans, and my reapplication for mortgage was denied because I have student loans now. So it was, that was kind of a shame for me. I noticed in my classes, a lot of my co-students worked with kids the same as me while they're going to school, but a lot of them, after they graduated, ended up moving either to administration or elementary education to be able to increase their income a little bit. And I think it's such a shame that after all the training we got and new information that could invigorate our classrooms, a lot of that does not get to the children that it was intended to get to. I think that these grants are really amazing and they're such a blessing, but it has to also be something sustainable so that teachers will stay in the workforce, because while the early learning scholarships are wonderful and almost all my students have them, in order to have spaces for those students, in order to have quality, we need to have teachers who are dedicated and also who will stay in their positions for an extended period of time. I notice also all the things that I learned in school, when I get to work, a lot of them don't translate over, because when early education is ran as a business, decisions are made based on business and based on money instead of what we know is good for children. So some examples are, we know low student-teacher ratios are good for children. We know that consistent caregivers are good for children, and time for planning for teachers are good for children. But what ends up happening because of staffing and money is that we fill the classrooms with kids. Kids get bumped around from room to room sometimes because of staffing. And we have high expectations of teachers without giving us enough time to get done what we need to get done outside of being with the children. A lot of times we teachers know what we need to do, but we don't have the time or the staffing in order to do the things that we know are right for children. I think one of the things about this is that if we treat early education more as an investment instead of just as a business, then that's what we're going to get back from it. We can make decisions based on what's right for children and what's right for teachers and families.
I'll have to have you wrap up shortly if you can, please.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to say I chose to invest my career in this field, and I thank everyone here who also chooses to invest and continue to invest in our children and our community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that perspective. It's so helpful to us to hear from someone doing this work right now and the reality of not just your work in the classroom, but the impact on the rest of your life. That's really helpful to us. So thank you so much for providing that. Thank you. So Ms. Swenson, you're up, and then we've got Ms. Schotthorst up after that. And so if you can identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm here. My name is Karen Swenson. I am here on behalf of Kids Count on Us, and I am also the director of a small nonprofit preschool in Rochester, Minnesota named Meadow Park Preschool and Child Care Center. We serve 75 children starting in preschool age through school age, and I employ 11 staff, seven of which are qualified teachers. And I've been the executive director there for almost 30 years, and I've been in early childhood much more than that. So I'm here today because we have a crisis in our child care system. We are still suffering from cuts from child care assistance that happened 15 years ago, and we are falling further behind every year. There are nearly 30,000 children in Minnesota whose families rely on child care assistance, and there are thousands more on the waiting list. Many families have given up. Some don't bother applying. We need more funding for these families. We also need increasing provider reimbursement, which is a huge piece of this puzzle. Child care workers are severely underpaid because rates are so out of date, pegged back to 2011. What if we paid doctors and hospital workers what we paid 9 years ago currently? Currently, we are funding childcare by low teacher wages and no benefits. This is on the backs of our workforce, specifically women. We're in a women workforce and women of color. And we're doing this important work. I have a master's degree in education. I pay nearly $1,000 a month for my own health insurance. The median wage of the teacher qualified individuals in my organization are paid $14.66 an hour. It's just unbelievable. This is unacceptable, and it is unsustainable. We need to increase reimbursement rates so we can raise pay and begin to address the workforce issue that's out there. No matter where they live or what they look like, all Minnesota children deserve a great start, and specifically a solid early childhood foundation. All children deserve to be paid, all teachers deserve to be paid a livable wage and benefits. The $500 million in House File 1 is just going to do that. It's going to be a great start for children. And it's going to support families, and it's going to take our teachers seriously that are doing the hard work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Swenson. And Ms. Schotthorst, you're up, and then Mr. Adkins will be up after you. And once you get settled in, identify yourself, please, and then proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I serve as the Director of Workplace Management and Workforce Development for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. For some brief background, the Minnesota Chamber is a statewide organization representing more than 6,300 businesses of all types and sizes and more than 500,000 employees throughout Minnesota. But we have also partnered with the legislature and a number of organizations that already have or will be testifying tonight on components of the bill before us. For example, we co-chair the Early Childhood Crisis Group mentioned earlier, which is dedicated to simultaneously solving the connected issues of Minnesota's worsening achievement and opportunity gaps and the severe shortage of quality early care and education programs. We also hold a role on the statutorily created Family Child Care Task Force with two of your colleagues here tonight that we heard about this morning, and we are working to ensure the viability of this segment of the child care industry. So with that background and context, I appreciate the opportunity to share our perspective on this issue more broadly in House File 1. One of the great strengths of Minnesota's economy is our talented and reliable workforce, but finding skilled workers is clearly among top concerns of employers of all types and sizes across the state. Minnesota is facing a significant workforce shortage, and the current need for workers is hindered by the growing childcare shortage in our communities. This shortage has the potential to impede economic success in many communities. Increasing quality early care and education is important, not just for addressing the current workforce shortage. It also addresses the workforce needs of the future, since early education improves kindergarten readiness, leading to closing the preparation gap and ultimately the achievement gap and career readiness. So we view this issue through a number of lenses. Quality early childhood care and education provides the foundation for a productive future workforce, and also supports the current workforce so that parents are able to participate. We support investment in early childhood education, and we support strategic realignment of existing resources, ensuring families throughout the state have the flexibility to find a high-quality program that fits their unique needs. Historically, our efforts have been focused on supporting early learning scholarships, childcare tax credits, and childcare capacity building grants, in addition to measures that support program integrity, improvement, and accountability. And we will continue to do so to help make Minnesota more affordable for employers, employees, and their families. We're particularly interested in increasing the supply of childcare in communities with a documented shortage of providers to ensure that communities have the ability to develop strategies that address the distinctive needs of regional economies and local employers. We are pleased to see that a number of these initiatives are included in the legislation before us. We know there will be an active debate on the proposed size and one-time nature of this investment, as well as other spending and tax reduction priorities, and we're looking forward to working with the legislature to get this right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to share our perspective on this critical issue with the committee tonight.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your testimony. And so we'll have Mr. Adkins come on up, and after that is going to be Salima Shabazz Salahuddin. And so, Mr. Adkins, identify yourself for the record, please, and please proceed.
Chair Pinto, members of the committee, good evening. My name is Jason Adkins. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference. We're the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We're grateful to Chair Pinto and Representative Gatiza Watoon for bringing this legislation forward that focuses on children, especially poor and at-risk children and their parents, so that they have vital connections to supports that help them at the earliest stages of life and child development. We'd like to speak this evening in support of two provisions in particular of HF1, most notably the prenatal disparities provision and the home visiting programs. These programs and the assistance they provide are important, especially to pregnant mothers, as an abundance of research literature shows these programs encourage better maternal and child health outcomes by, among other things, encouraging doctor visits, healthier habits, better nutrition, reducing the incidence of child injury and neglect, and fostering better long-term academic achievement. One study by the RAND Corporation indicated that for every $1.75 spent on home visiting programs, it is likely to save $5.70 in spending in protective services, special ed, and criminal justice programs over the course of that child's life. That is extraordinary and underscores the importance of investments at the earliest stages to reduce opportunity gaps, so the opportunity gaps don't turn into longer-term health and achievement gaps. As this committee and our legislature continue to examine early child well-being, it should be kept in mind that the only set of data points that we are aware of that correlate with the achievement gaps in reading are the percentage of children living in two-parent homes. Now, correlation is not causation, but it doesn't mean it isn't compelling. Though the programs being discussed in HF1 fill important opportunity gaps, there is no substitute for a child's quality interactions with parents in a home marked by family stability. We need bolder proposals that encourage and assist people to stay at home with their children in early childhood, not just temporary paid leave programs from work, but instead other policies that promote marriage and family stability. We're not here today to recommend specific proposals, as the topic is HF1, but the research is clear that there is no better way to give a child a great start. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for being here. So we've got Salima Shabazz Salahuddin coming up, and then after that will be Krista Andrews. And thank you for being here. And as you get settled in, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed as you're ready.
All right. Good evening. I'm Salima Shabazz Salahuddin, and it's an honor to be before the chairman. Thank you. As a mother, I have four beautiful children, 14, 9, 6, and 5, who all have at some point received financial support in early education. With early education support, that is not always affordable, especially with multiple children. This allows children to be exposed to a setting in school, a routine outside of their home routine, benefiting from having better transitions into elementary school. And I can say that from my own experience. Through being in early child care, it allowed access and hands-on support through the community and resources. At this time, in some of my experiences, that eliminates labels and inaccurate and unnecessary screenings, or you'll be able to detect what may be needed for early intervention. And this made my children's transition very, very easy to go into school. As a parent, through the years, the financial support has supported me with continuing education and given me a sound mind to continue to get out and go to work and having dependable, reliable help. In addition to those great experiences that I could have not done by myself, when life comes and uncontrollable situations happen and major transitions take place, and I could kind of chime in with the support of people serving people, mm-hmm. and a lot of transitionings that happened with my children, this became a support in areas for mental health, for restoring and reviving my children. This gave them a predictable, stable routine as I was able to be revived as a mother and as a caregiver to restore and rehabilitate my children. This gave them some sense of blissfulness while I was able to get myself together and get them together. The money is a proper investment. I don't know how I could have really done it without stable, consistent, reliable, dependable child care. And with this support, I feel secure because I was able to continue on with trusted relationships that I might not have had outside of the educational system. And at this point in time in our healthy wholeness, we have been able to be successful with my son having the support he needed with partnerships like Washburn Children for Mental Health, Think Small, the North Side Achievement Zone, who came right on board like a triage almost, where I can continue to be the great parent that I strive to be, even when I had no control of things that, unforeseen things that not only caused trauma for my children, but for me as well. So I really appreciate the support. Continue to invest because our children are our future. And if we can gravitate to them at those precious moments where they need us the most, we can give them the greatest shot. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your perspective as a parent, Ms. Lardin. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
So we've got Krista Andrews up, and then Ann Krisnick will be next. And so, Ms. Andrews, identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Krista Andrews, and I serve as the coordinator for a statewide public-private partnership called Transforming Minnesota's Early Childhood Workforce. This work is informed by the recommendations from the National Academies of Sciences and the more than 40,000 early childhood educators in Minnesota. I know that this committee is fully aware of the importance of investing in our young children. One of the most critical components in a quality early learning experience is the teacher. And I say teacher intentionally because no matter the setting, the early childhood provider is teaching and children are learning. Being an early childhood educator is a critically important profession, and yet we all know that the early childhood workforce is undervalued and undercompensated. You've heard tonight directly from early childhood teachers about the poverty level wages earned by the early childhood workforce. In Minnesota, 1/3 of the early childhood workforce qualifies for public assistance, and we spend $43 million per year in public assistance to support these primarily female workers. By working for such abysmal wages, these women, many of whom are women of color, are quite literally subsidizing working parents and businesses across the state. I am here tonight in support of House File 1, as it would make a positive difference for the early childhood workforce. We strongly support increasing access dollars, whether that be through the Child Care Assistance Program, the Early Learning Scholarships, or other ways, as a way to get critically needed resources to the early childhood workforce and subsequently increase compensation. The tide of early childhood workers, particularly family child care providers, leaving the field is undoubtedly connected to the reduction in the CCAP reimbursement rate. The investments in House File 1 to the teach and retain programs would provide much needed support so that child care providers can continue their education and be rewarded for staying in the field. Finally, the investments in the workforce and the early childhood system through grants to DEED, the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, First Children's Finance, and others would provide important opportunities to build quality and support the early childhood workforce. Minnesota's early childhood workforce is literally the foundation upon which the rest of the early childhood system depends. Minnesota needs qualified, diverse, supported, and equitably compensated early childhood educators so that parents can go to work, businesses can hire employees, and children can thrive. Thank you very much for this bill and for the opportunity to be with you here tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Anders. And as Ms. Krisnick comes up, we'll have Diane Halsey will be next. I can't resist an editorial comment. You had said that the early childhood workforce is the foundation for the rest of the early childhood system. What I thought you were going to say is this foundation for everything else we do. Because, of course,
that's working what I meant
with, to say. Okay. Because it all starts in those first couple years. Ms. Krisnick, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ann Krisnick. I'm the executive director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, which is a statewide interfaith group comprised of the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. And I'm here to speak in support of the child care assistance provisions of House File 1. In our faith communities, we see families with all kinds of joys and celebrations, but also a significant number of struggles. And we see families that are struggling to find affordable child care. We see providers that make the difficult decision to leave a job and really a mission and a calling that they have because they can't afford to remain in the field because of the low reimbursement rates. We see parents who have found work or opportunities to go to school and learn a trade or profession that are unable to do that because of the number of waiting list spots that aren't currently funded. One of our congregations, our member congregations down in Rochester, decided that they wanted to address a key need in their community, and after discussion, they identified childcare as one of the key challenges that really needed to be addressed there, and they made a decision to convert their Sunday school space to childcare and work with a nonprofit to do that. It really underscores the importance that our folks are hearing every day about childcare. This bill is a really important first step to addressing the low provider rates and the need to address them. We are very pleased to see that it puts Minnesota into minimal compliance with the federal requirements. We also look very much forward to working with members of this committee to continue to build on this important first step toward provider rates, to increase them, and to address the number of families that are on the waiting list. We know that child care is really important to children and to parents and to employers, and we look forward to continuing to address this. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. So we'll have Ms. Halsey come up. She's here. She's not here. Okay. And she's the last person who was on the list in advance. It does feel like every single person in the room has spoken, I must say. to me. I know that's not actually true, but it feels that way. Is there anyone else who's here who wishes to provide public testimony on the bill? I'm not seeing anybody come up, but just in case that there is. So here's the plan, members. So we will be voting on this bill by the end of our session on Thursday, so 9:30 a.m. on Thursday. I understand, I get the sense from the minority that it, and I suppose from all members, that that seems like a pretty doable plan, though I will note that, you know, where it's not too late, if folks have questions for anybody who's here, any statements they want to make or anything else they want, a business they want to accomplish now to make it easier on Thursday, we can. Alternatively, my expectation is we should be just fine to get through whatever we need to Thursday morning, and then we can be all done. So I'll maybe look to lead Representative Franson. If that seems to you, Representative Franson, we should be okay to get this done on Thursday and be done now.
But yeah, absolutely. You have our guarantee that we will be done by 9:30 on Thursday.
Okay. I've got okay. Representative Franson is...
Depending on how much coffee I've had.
Oh, that's right. We're all going to need something. Yeah, exactly. But at least this is not too bad today. So a reminder that if there are any amendments, there don't need to be. They would be due tomorrow at 3. And then anything from any other members that will have any questions for anybody who's testified? I get the impression no. So, I really do want to thank everyone who provided your statements. It's really, really helpful. And in particular, I will say the folks who provided perspectives as parents and as individual providers, that's really powerful, and we don't get nearly enough of that. So Representative Katisa Watoon, I think on Thursday we'll give you the last word on your bill at that point. We discussed it then. So good. Thanks so much to all, and we are adjourned.